Well, good morning. I call to order the Palm Beach Metropolitan Planning Organization meeting. Today is Thursday, October 16th. The time is 9:02 a.m. And our first order of business is roll call.
Here.
Here.
Eric Jacklin. Jeff Santa Maria. Judy Davis. Al Balashay.
Here.
Keith James. Pam Triolo.
Here.
Paulette Burdick.
Here.
Drusilla Taylor is excused. Wendy Harrison.
Here.
Richard Valutis.
Here.
Steve Wilson.
Here.
Susan Kennedy.
Here.
Matt Wilhite.
Here.
Michael Fitzpatrick.
Here.
Shannon Materia.
Here.
Ed Oakwald is excused. Terry Glistein.
Thank you very much. Mayor Wilson will lead us in the prayer and the pledge, if you'll all please rise.
Will you all please bow your heads? Oh, Heavenly Father, we come to you once again with bowed heads and humble hearts, thanking you for another opportunity, an opportunity where we can share our ideas, our thoughts, and our concerns towards the needs of mankind. We thank you for the chair of this committee and the team that you have allowed to be assembly here today, realizing that without you, we are nothing. You've been better to us than we've been to ourselves. Heavenly Father, we continue to ask you for be a blessing upon this world, our nation, our state, our county, and our various communities as we deal with the many challenges that we face today. Have mercy upon us all as we continue to do the work of mankind, realizing that there are no strangers in this world or in this room today, just friends we have not yet met. We give you all the praises and the glory. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our next item is our agenda. Mr. Uren, are there any changes?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, then I'll entertain a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
Second.
Moved by Wilhout, second by Burdick. Any further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
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 And we'll move on to the minutes of September 18th, 2014. Oh, we're not complete at the time of publication. We'll be presented. All right, so we have no minutes to consider. Comments of the chair? Two of our members will be leaving us. Unfortunately, neither of them are here this morning. Commissioner Santa Maria and Commissioner Opel. Today would be their last meeting. Mr. Opel, both of, I guess, was he term limited or he just chose not to run for re-election? And Commissioner Santa Maria was term limited. So we have certificates for them from the MPO to thank them for their service. And if either of them arrives today, we'll be happy to make those presentations. Under my chair reports, the only other thing that I think that perhaps we as a board should discuss, we don't have to do it today, is the County Commission's initiative to move Palm Beach County from the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council to the South Florida Regional Planning Council. And I think that that has an impact on the dealing of this board. And so perhaps at our next meeting, we could agenda that and have some discussion about it. Yes.
I think it might come before us before our next meeting, don't you think? So
probably.
Perhaps it wouldn't be a good idea.
To discuss it today, well, perhaps someone from the county commission, maybe the prevailing side or not, could tell us the reasoning why and what actual action the county commission is going to take.
I don't think we have the prevailing side here.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we all vote.
Commissioner Berger.
Yeah, you voted for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of them.
Oh, you want my comments?
Well, no, I'd just like to know what's behind the what's motivating this, and you know why you think that this is the right thing to do. That's all.
That's fine. Mayor Taylor was the one who originally brought this up and asked for a board direction to come back and discuss the issue, and the board discussed the issue. And if I remember my comments correctly, Commissioner Abrams commented that Palm Beach County is very eclectic, and the north end of the county aligns more with the north, with Martin County and the counterparts, and the south part of the county aligns more with Broward as being more urban. So my comment to that was, I think we asked Todd to come up to the microphone, our legislative affairs director, to possibly talk to the legislators about it, to see if there was some sort of a compromise or some. Are there other counties that are like that that might be in a split? And that was generally the direction that we gave, and we asked for it to be brought back.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's. I'm glad to hear that.
I don't
know
if Commissioner
Balashay or Vice Chair Burdick, would you like to?
Well, I know, as I mentioned at our commission meeting, I convened quarterly a meeting of all the cities in my district, and we had discussed this the week before it came to the commission, and the unanimous view from all of the North County cities was to stay with Treasure Coast because, as Commissioner Berger said, people felt like we had much more similarities with the counties to the north than we did with Broward and Dade. So I voted against it in alignment with the sentiment within the district. And I think that idea probably is impractical of splitting the county and having part of it in each MPO. The other factor in favor of joining South Florida is the costs are much, much lower. It's a $300,000 savings for the county, and we're in a budget, perennial budget crisis. So, you know, that $300,000 will go towards something meaningful.
George is restriping.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Commissioner Burdick, do you want to weigh in or no?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank you for bringing it up and looking at the timeline. I don't see, to me, there has not been a demonstrated purpose that we would want to change. I know the cities in the central part of the county have got, everybody has been well served by the Treasure Coast. We know the outstanding work they did in supporting the 750 plan. So, unless there is a demonstrated need to make this change, I'm very pleased with the work that they've done. I know that the cities are, and would ask for the cities to perhaps weigh in on this, and maybe, I know it wasn't noticed today, but maybe just a consensus of what how MPO feels, what their preference would be.
Oh, okay. Elizabeth can't hear us. Okay. Well, again, this isn't an agenda item, and, you know, I just wanted to bring it up. I think it's an important decision. I think it would have a very great impact on our planning efforts, both and our regional efforts here in the county. And for those that were not aware of this action, I just wanted to bring it up to their attention. Commissioner Harrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to bring up something that our mayor brought up at our council meeting, which I thought was an interesting point. She serves on Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council. And we talked about how the northern part of the county, the land use patterns are very similar to counties north of us. But in terms of transportation, we're much more connected to the south. So she was making the point that the current arrangement is actually very good because with the MPO AC, we're connected to the counties to the south. But with the Treasure Coast, we're connected to the counties to the north. And we really need both connections. And her point was that each organization serves a different purpose. And we are happy with Treasure Coast. I mean, their staff is phenomenal. And so she was making the point that the current arrangement is very good because we have connections both ways.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Okay. Anybody else want to weigh in on this issue? I just ask you to go back to your cities and have the conversation so that perhaps if your councils wish to weigh in with the county before they make this final decision, at least your voices will be heard. So, and that concludes my comments as the chair. Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A few items for the board's attention this morning. First, I wanted to bring everyone's attention to the fact that the All Board Florida draft environmental impact statement for phase two of their project, the portion from West Palm Beach up to Orlando, was released on September 19th of this year, and there is a public meeting in Palm Beach County on October 29th at the West Palm Beach Marriott from 3:30 to 7 p.m. to provide an opportunity for members of the public as well as local elected officials to ask questions and discuss that draft document with both the staff from the Federal Rail Administration and the All Aboard Florida Project team. Second item for my report, I wanted to bring your attention to the list of quiet zone and safety improvements that I distributed earlier this month that we would be able to fund along the FEC corridor with the funds that this MPO board allocated for that purpose. Wanted to make sure that everyone was aware that we are funding enough supplemental safety measures to allow for a city-by-city quiet zone designation along the FEC corridor from 15th Street in West Palm Beach down to Broward County. We're also able to fund missing sidewalk improvements, sidewalk connections at 41 of the 83 rail crossings throughout the FEC corridor. And we're going to be able to install additional exit gates at many of the locations that were requested by our local governments to further improve safety on the corridor. Overall, we're going to be making improvements to 70 of the 83 crossings using the funds that this board allocated for that purpose. And I did want to call your attention to the fact that the All Aboard Florida team is in the field even today reviewing those locations and establishing the constructability review, kind of making sure that we can build all of the things that we've asked for. That project team that is comprised of the All Aboard Florida folks from the FEC rail component of that corporation, as well as Federal Rail Administration and Florida Department of Transportation officials, to ensure that what's being identified is going to conform with all safety and design standards. So they were in Boca and Delray Beach yesterday, and they're going to be in Boynton Beach and West Palm Beach, Boynton Beach, Lantana, Lake Worth, West Palm Beach today, finishing up with the corridor later this afternoon. Next item for my report, Councilwoman Wendy Harrison and I had the opportunity to attend the Railvolution Conference in Minneapolis, and I personally found it incredibly useful. It's a fantastic conference, gives you a transit provider perspective on how to advance public transportation in the development of our urban transportation systems. Some things that really stuck out to me, in particular about Minneapolis, I was very impressed by their light rail system, the emphasis they've placed and investment they've made in connecting their downtown with the surrounding areas via the light rail that operates in mixed traffic, within the roadway network. It's not a dedicated rail corridor for much of that downtown urban area system. I was also impressed by the widespread implementation of their bike sharing program, the number of stations where you could check a bike out, kind of rent it by the hour, ride around to your destination, and then check it back in at another location. I thought that was fantastic. And then the overall investment that they've made in that city and their non-motorized infrastructure to support active transportation. And I wanted to point out, I resonated with one of the cities in their presentation to the conference attendees, noted that their goal for their city was to change the public perception of transit in their city from a social service to a lifestyle choice. And I thought that resonated with me as far as what may be a logical next step for us in Palm Beach County. How do we move our public transit system from the perception that it may be functioning as a social service to becoming an attractive lifestyle choice, something that optional users would choose to partake of? Other thing that stuck out to me was the introduction of bus rapid transit systems. They don't carry the capital cost of a full light rail system, but they provide a lot of the amenities to the customers of a light rail system. For example, construction of level boarding platforms, low floor vehicles so that you can get right on and off the bus without having to walk up and down any steps, enhanced shelters, offboard fare collection, real-time passenger information, transit signal priority systems, and branded vehicles to highlight the value of that public transportation investment and make that system attractive to the users. So those are some of the things that stuck out to me, and I know Councilwoman Harrison may have some other items to share from that. And following up on the conference discussion, I wanted to point out that Commissioner Shannon Monterio and I will be heading to AMPO, the National MPO Conference, next week, which will be in Atlanta, Georgia this year. And Luke Lambert from the MPO staff is also going to be attending that conference with us. So we're looking forward to the difference of perspective. You see the transit user perspective in Railvolution, and now we'll get to see the MPO local elected official and how they're allocating funding towards transportation projects in other parts of the country. So I think we'll have some interesting case studies to share with you when we return from that trip. And last item on my report to you this morning, the December meeting, just kind of keeping in mind this whole transportation process, you've got the long-range plan that gives you the umbrella of which projects we want to work on. And then on an annual basis, the MPO adopts a list of priority projects that say which of those long-range items or which categories of projects would we like to work on next in funding and constructing. We adopted that priority project list last month as a board. The board took action on that in September. That list was given to the Department of Transportation, and the way those projects get implemented is by the Department of Transportation coming back to the board next month, next meeting rather, the December MPO meeting, because we don't meet in November. They will come back to this board and present to you what they call their draft tentative work program. That's their effort to take our suggested projects and incorporate funding on those projects and present it to you for approval. So that will be the next chance you get to see what they've done with those priority projects and how we're advancing those ideas into a point where we can construct them. Just trying to build that continuity for you. So that will be on our agenda in December, as well as some I-95 updates, the master plan, as well as the scope of improvements at particular interchanges, and an update on the interchange analysis for Central Boulevard in northern Palm Beach County, and a regional plan overview. So I'm kind of giving you a teaser for December, trying to help you. And then,
trailer.
Yeah, that's right. So these are good things to come back for. And then I wanted to bring this up as just a general comment, and then if there is any feedback in the development of it. One of the items that came up when the board performed an evaluation of my performance in June was a request to conduct a board retreat. So looking at our calendar, the January MPO meeting, we because of the way the calendar lays out, we really don't have the opportunity to conduct advisory committee meetings prior to that meeting because of the holiday schedules. And so it's difficult to handle items of substance in the January meeting. Historically, we've kind of split 50-50. Sometimes we've canceled the meeting. Sometimes we've had it where we just sort of do administrative tasks, election of officers for the year and whatnot. We could potentially move those administrative tasks to the December meeting and then conduct a board retreat instead of the January meeting. So in order for me to kind of get started on the planning of that, and we had talked about it being a mobile retreat, and I know there's some logistics that I'll have to make sure we manage well regarding sunshine law and availability for access to all members of the public. But I think the Palm Trans Service Board recently participated in a retreat like this, and they were able to manage the challenges and logistics of something like that. So we can learn from their experiences and sort of make that a trial, a case study. So I'm letting you know that that's my intention, that we would try to do a board retreat in January, and I don't know if there's any particular feedback, concerns, objections about that. But if so, feel free to share them with me this morning or offline, and I'd be glad to take that into consideration.
Commissioner Materio?
Are we considering an island retreat?
Depends on the island.
I think that the request of me was to allow board members to kind of experience some of the transportation projects that we're discussing. So what we would like to do is to make sure that you have an opportunity to ride the train, ride the bus, and then...
Can we do water taxi, too?
And
ooh.
And I think as we recognize, you know, just following on the Treasure Coast in the South Florida Planning Council conversation, Palm Beach County is 2,000 square miles, and it's a large area to absorb. And so I need to make bite-sized pieces as part of the target for a retreat. So I think what I'd like to suggest is that we would make it a more of a public transit-oriented retreat and experience this time, with an opportunity for feedback and suggestions, and then maybe we could even incorporate that as part of our annual routine, where in January, instead of a board meeting, we would do some sort of a field retreat where we would get to experience some of these different transportation components of our transportation system.
No, I think that's good, Nick. And also, you know, while we're traveling around the county, we can also look at, you know, some of our successes throughout the county, some of the improvements that we have made that have made a difference. So everyone good to do the mobile retreat in January? I think it's a great idea. I think
can we
it's
take a look at the date in case there's conflicts?
It
would be in lieu of the board meeting. So it would be the third Thursday of January. I don't remember the exact date on the calendar.
January 15th.
There you are. So it would be January 15th. And the concept for the retreat, as it was laid out to me, and I think this is a good one if we can afford the time, is that we would actually spend late morning, have lunch in the field, and then have the afternoon available to us as well. So it would be more of a 9 o'clock, 9:30 start time all the way through to maybe 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon. Mm. That's the general time frame, and the target date would be January 15th. So maybe I'll send out an email requesting interest and availability, and make sure that we'll have enough board member interest to make that a real item.
Okay, great. Thank you, Nick. Commissioner Balashay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As you know, since we last met, all our board floors indicated that it's going to seek private sector financing rather than the RIF loan. So my question is, if they go ahead and withdraw the RIF loan application, does that mean the EIS hearings are terminated? And maybe Kim has the answer to that. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the answer is yes, but I'll let Kim answer that definitively.
Sure. Kim Delaney from the Regional Planning Council. So as we understand it, pardon me, the EIS is contingent, is only required because of the RIF loan.
Right.
And so what All Aboard Florida has indicated is that it's seeking private activity bonds, a different type of funding source. There is some public relationship to private activity bonds, and we'll have a summary actually at the council meeting tomorrow, Commissioner, and then we'll circulate that. It's kind of a little overview of how those bonds are administered and approved. And so All Aboard Florida has indicated, it's our understanding, they'll continue to seek the RIF loan, and so the Regional Planning Council is continuing forward with the EIS process, of course. In fact, there'll be comments for the council to review at its meeting on November 22nd, a special meeting that was scheduled for this purpose. It's a point of concern, as Commissioner Valachet has discussed at the council and others perhaps as well, because the EIS provides really the only opportunity for a consistent review of the project and any type of conditions, if you will. And so outside of that, there isn't really a formal approval process for the activities that are proposed by All Aboard Florida. So that's kind of where it stands.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Kim. Questions? Commissioner Harrison.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments actually on the EIS. I'm glad you brought it up. This board will not meet before the deadline for comments, which is December 3rd. And so I don't expect that our staff will necessarily have comments, but our town staff is certainly reviewing the EIS. I was surprised that they only provided information for two intersections in Palm Beach County. I thought there would be an analysis for each intersection, but there's for Banyan Boulevard and Northlake Boulevard were the only ones that they analyzed. Hmm. So that's, you know, there's a lot of other intersections. So our staff is certainly going to be looking at Indiantown Road, for example, in Jupiter, but I don't know if the other cities, if West Palm North or the county are going to be looking in detail at the impacts of the intersections, but I would suggest that we should. Since this is our only chance, I don't know if the result will end up being meaningful or enforceable, but I just think to protect the public, you know, we ought to be looking at the impacts. So I would encourage the county commissioners to check with your staff and city folks, especially north of West Palm, to do so also.
Okay, good point. Thanks so much. All right, let's move on to our consent agenda. Members, we have our consent agenda before us. Is there any member that would like to pull any item or discuss any item?
I would.
Yes, Mayor Triola.
I was absent at the last meeting. I'm sorry I had to go out of town on business, but the City of Lake Worth had an opportunity to make a presentation, and you met our head of Public Works, Jamie Brown.
Yes.
And Felipe Lafazo, and I just wanted to say that I hope you were as impressed with them as we are in the City of Lake Worth.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, do I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda as presented?
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Second.
Motion by Triola, second by Scott. Any further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, great. Okay, this is the time in our meeting where we have general public comments. Is there anyone in the public that would like to comment on any general item not related to our agenda? No, seeing no one come forward, we will move on to our action items. And our first item is the 2040 Long Range Transportation Plan. Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In fact, it's our only action item on this agenda. We wanted to make sure we paid full attention to this item this morning. It's my pleasure to introduce to you again Charlotte Davidson from Lefwich Consulting Engineers. She's going to be reviewing the steps to develop this 2040 long-range transportation plan, including the public involvement process, the development of goals, objectives, values, the forecasted growth in population, employment, anticipated revenue to fund projects in our system, the evaluation of our desired improvements, all of those steps which culminate in the establishment of a list of cost-feasible projects or project categories, as the case may be, in the development of this overall plan. And just to set the stage for her presentation, I want to remind the board, this sets our general course. Really, it's a 25-year plan, but it sets our general course for how we conduct business over the next 5 years. Federal regulation dictates that we update the long-range plan every 5 years. It was last updated in October of 2009. So we get to revisit any assumptions that we've made and tweak the direction that we're heading in again 5 years from now. I also wanted to remind the board that inclusion of a project in the cost feasible plan allows us to advance the project into the TIP for funding and construction of that individual project by adding it to the list of annual list of priority projects. I want to make clear that the order in the plan, while somewhat based on where we expect growth to occur and which projects we think will be necessary first, second, and third, is not constraining. So if circumstances change and we want to advance a project that's shown in a later year before a project in an earlier year, the board would have the freedom to do that. So I don't want you to get too hung up on where a project is shown on the list, but rather whether it's on the list or not. With that, I'll turn it over to Charlotte.
All right. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Again, I'm Charlotte Davidson. I'm from Lefwich Consulting Engineers, and we've had the honor of working on this Directions 2040 plan for about a year and a half, and I know you guys have seen us come to presentations in that period on and off. And I've been directed to give you just a general overview. I just want to mention to everybody there is a nice little pamphlet or executive summary of that even gives you a little bit more details. I want to highlight some items that we've gone through as part of the process and share those with you. And then at the end, if you have questions or specific comments, obviously we'd be glad to answer those and see if we can assist you in any way. So with that, let me get started. Today is the public hearing for the adoption of the Directions 2040 plan. And I realize it's very difficult to see all the information on the slides, and I hope you'll follow along in your booklet. I'm going to be skipping a couple pages here and there, but I just want to share with you some of the highlights, if you may. In terms of public involvement, we did an extensive and a new direction of how we did it. In the past, we've done like separate presentation to a couple locations throughout the county just for the plan. This time, the public information officer took the direction and was very well put together to piggyback with an existing event that was already available to the public. And specifically, there's in the outreach summary, it shares with you all the efforts that were undertaken to make sure that we undertook the effort of providing information to the citizens at large. We did 42 presentations to this board and your committees. We did 2 presentations to the transit board and a committee. We did 20 presentations to various civic groups and so forth. We did 25 days of exhibiting information and providing the survey to the public, the transportation survey. We had 5 ANC partnership workshops. We attempted to do 3 social media sites. It was unfortunately not very successful, but, you know, learning process for next time maybe. We distributed almost 6,700 plastic bags, which you see in the pictures, the purple bag, that provided information on the plan process, not on the process, but how to get information about the plan process. There was about 550 surveys, which I think is a record for the NPO and any surveys. They provided us a wealth of information, very detailed information. We did 3 brochures, and they were distributed in 3 different languages, English, Creole, and Spanish. And finally, there was 2 newsletters that were sent out to a list of 1,000 people. And that gives you just an overview of the public involvement effort, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time on that. The goals, objectives, and values were endorsed by the MPO last month, and essentially the information that's presented here is exactly the same. We did have some minor word requests from the, I think, the Citizens Advisory that we did accommodate, but they did not change anything in terms of the objectives themselves. So if you have questions on that later, I'd be glad to go through that. Here is a map of the existing highway and transit freight information. This is for the northern part of the county. And again, I really direct you to your brochure, I think, or the executive summary really gives you a better view of what's in there. But I want to highlight the what's shown in the map. In terms of number of lanes on the roadway facilities, black is the two-lane, purple is three, red is a four-lane facility, blue is six lanes, green is eight lanes, and the pink is 10 lanes or more. This shows various where the tri-rail stations are. In the light gray, it shows where the existing bus routes are, as well as various freight providers such as airports, and there's also park and ride lots, the seaport as well. So that gives you an overview of what's already out here today. Next, as part of the plan process, we looked at what type of growth we're anticipating to occur in the next over the next 25 years, but specifically we looked from the standpoint of the 2010 census data and the projected forecast to 2040. As you see, the population grew from 1.3 billion to almost 1.7 billion. Employment is projected to grow from 571 to 820,000 over that 30-year period, and you see that in the graphs as well. And you can see specific growth on your maps. And the your 2040 Desires Plan was designed to essentially look at all the transit, freight, and highway projects that are desired or what we would like to see if we had the revenues available to fund anything within reason. Is it something that's viable and that makes sense to incorporate into your long-range forecast? The plan included tri-rail, commuter rail expansion, new local bus route, express routes, extensive list of those, and you see those in the pink lines. And the tri-rail expansions included extending up to Jupiter as well as going to the VA hospital at on the kind of east-west side. There's also a new intermodal center at Boca as well as the intermodal logistics center in the Glades area. There's a new park and ride lot expansions. There's what we call an illustrative U.S. 27 rail corridor. And by that we mean it's like a regional project. It's the concept was not that we were going to fund the project, but we wanted to put it in as an idea and as something we'd like to see. And there's also extensive projects in terms of new and widened roadway projects. And I can highlight a couple of those for you. It's on the second series on the maps. Okeechobee Boulevard extending to the west in terms of new facility. There's widening along I-95 as well as improvements to interchanges. But again, this is a desires plan. This is the first look to see what we would like before we decide what we can afford. And then, and this is the revenue projections. I know we've shown you revenue projections as part of the plan process, and last time we shared it with you, it was in terms of 2014 dollars or existing dollars so that we could just generally look at it. Now that we know what the cost-feasible plan is, which is what I'm going to get to next, we have brought it into the year of expenditure dollars, so when the projects actually come into play and how the money gets matched with the individual projects. We've also added a couple items, kind of information items. We've added railway, Port of Palm Beach, as well as airport funds, not because we are trying to specifically review what projects need to come in from that side because they have their own individual master plans, but just to acknowledge the fact that those projects come through your TIP. And you have it as part of your process of projects that are being looked at. So we wanted to give that new emphasis. And that, given the, now that we have the revenue side, where we know where what our desires are, the next step was to come up with a cost feasible plan. What we did was we ranked all the projects in the desires plan. We did that working through a workshop with all your committees. And we did an extensive review of every corridor and every transit line and so forth. And we ranked the projects. Then that was one part of the process. Then the second part of the process was to look at projects that already have some funding, like right-of-way or there's a preliminary engineering. If there's already funding, then obviously those projects are already being in the process, so we wanted to acknowledge those and bring those in the cost-feasible plan. And what you see in front of you, and I want to spend a little time here, is the proposed cost-feasible plan. You will note there's numbers next to each project, and those numbers correspond with the tables in the back of this package. So if you can match the number to an actual project, there's two sets. There's if it's called H1, it corresponds with the highway projects. If it's T1, let's say, then it's a transit project or freight project. So I wanted to mention that to you in case you have a specific question about any projects. We can all go to the same map and go from there. So here you see the transit component of the cost feasible plan. Again, we're maintaining the tri-rail expansions both to Jupiter and to the VA hospital. We're adding all the express bus routes that were in the desires plan. There is numerous new tri-rail improvements. Let's see. There's park and ride expansions. There's the intermodal center in Boca. There is the logistics center in the Glades area. I think that's just a general overview of the transit projects. On the highway side, flipping to the north of the county, you see there's a few improvements on the I-95 itself. There's numerous interchange improvements that were maintained from the desires plan into the cost feasible plan. All the other roadway projects that were in the desires plan were found cost feasible, as we presented to you last month. We actually found that there was extra funds available, and I'll get into that shortly. So again, aside from what are considered strategic intermodal facility projects, which include I-95 and also includes the Turnpike in some cases, and State Road 710, as well as State Road 80, Southern Boulevard, all projects that were in your desired plan are also in the cost-feasible plan. And that is probably the first time ever in the history of your MPO, I would think, as far as to my knowledge. So I want to mention specifically the local initiatives program, because when we had extra revenues, what we did, based on the recommendations we received from your committees as well as the board, is those extra funds were put into the local initiatives program. And the local initiatives program is essentially transportation system management projects, which includes intersection improvements, signage, payment striping, anything that makes the operations of your system better. There are transit projects that could be eligible funding, capital only. There are non-motorized projects, that's bicycle, pedestrian-type projects, and there are freight-type projects. But the caveat here is that those projects would have to be less than $5 million projects. So they're smaller projects that you can move through the process easily. We don't have to identify, okay, this signal needs a new light or the new turn lane here or smaller type improvements. We don't have to identify every one of those. The opportunity is here on an annual basis to come in with local stakeholders, can present their projects, and it goes through the process, and then you identify which projects that year can be funded. So that's a general overview of that. There's a long list of tables with all the projects that are in your plan. If you need to, I can go into detail on that specifically, but I'm going to just ask you to ask questions about that at the end if you like. I just wanted to mention the Aviation Port and Railways Program, and I really want to acknowledge, Nick, your specific part in bringing this into the plan really for the first time in this way. His direction is that anything that's in your TIP really should be as part of your long-range plan. yeah, we can mention they're in the master plans, but we still need to acknowledge the efforts and the fact that that is part of the plan. So there's a section here dedicated just to acknowledging that we have multiple airports in the county, that we have the Port of Palm Beach, that we have railway corridors that are being used by various providers, the Tri-Rail, the Amtrak, and so forth. So there's examples here of specific projects that are currently in your TIP to give you a general idea of what kind of projects come through your process. And then finally, I want to acknowledge that this was not just an MPO process. This was a regional coordination effort. We worked together with the Broward MPO and the Miami-Dade MPO to ensure that on a regional perspective that there were consistencies between three plans, so that any projects that cross borders or any considerations to large projects would be, you know, consistent, and that we were all consistent in terms of the approach we were taking. There was a common regional goal that the three MPOs came up with, and the slogan or theme is three metropolitan areas, one traveling public. So very short, concise, and to the point. Common regional goal in the 2040 local plans, coordinated regional planning and decision-making that results in a seamless system of multimodal facilities to meet the travel needs of people and freight. And just the map is just to give you an overview of where the three counties are in the MPOs. And with that, I would be delighted to answer any questions you have.
Members' questions? Commissioner Wilhide.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, something I found very interesting out of your survey results, you know, they all show vast numbers of capital improvement and cost in dollars. But the number two item that seems to be would seem to be the most feasible, I don't know what's involved in it, but it would be improved traffic signal operations.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't seem like there's that much capital. I understand there's a lot of new technology, the sensors and stuff. But, you know, to score number two with 73% of just improving things right now, mm-hmm. seems like something we could do now versus having to do for 20, 40-year plan here out of what we're talking about here. So I just look at something maybe we could really focus on a short-term fix here of not looking at this long-term plan of helping our commuters right now. You know, and I don't know if that's signaling or timing or ongoing maintenance of them or isn't some improvement, because I know they've moved away from the stuff in the road, the sensors versus the, you know, the ones on the arms yep. and things. But mm-hmm. it just seems like that's something out of looking at all of these. It's not as large of cost that we have to consider here that maybe we could really do have a larger impact on sooner. So, again, I found that pretty interesting that it showed up number two with such a high consideration, but out of these surveys that we could maybe fix something right now.
Sure. Nick, would you like to address that question?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great observation, and I want to point out kind of the value of the local initiatives program is that those are lower cost projects that we can implement rather quickly, and we have identified several corridors for funding in our TIP already. Northlake Boulevard is funded for implementation of what's called an adaptive traffic signal system to make the traffic lights operate smarter so that they are green only when the cars are there, and they're green for the whole duration of the demand, and you don't have those side street long delays. We've got a system that we're close to implementing on Okeechobee Boulevard in the eastern portion of the corridor. We funded implementation of that system in the PGA Boulevard corridor. The Glades Road East corridor in Boca Raton has already implemented that type of technology, and in this round of amendments that was just approved, or this round of applications, rather, that was just approved by this board last month, the Indiantown Road corridor was also advanced for installation of that system to make the signals operate more efficiently. And then to your point on the detection system and its reliability, the county requested two projects that were approved by this board last month. One was the expansion of its fiber optic communications network to bring more traffic signals into the overall computer system so that they can be managed from the central traffic management center without having to go out in the field and make modifications to those individual timings. And the second was the conversion of traffic signals that are currently informed by pavement loops in the ground, inductive loops that are constructed in the ground that are prone to being cut by various construction activities, and then the signals don't perform efficiently. They're converting those loops to video detection devices that are mounted on the poles themselves so that the cameras can tell what the signal, whether a vehicle is waiting and how long the light needs to stay green. So you're absolutely right. Those are great projects, and we are advancing as many of those as we can afford to accomplish. And then, Madam Chair, if I could make one more brief remark before we take additional comments. The two items I neglected to mention. First, that all three of your advisory committees did recommend approval of this plan. They were very involved in the process and made several refinements even as early as earlier this month to individual components of the document. And then I distributed a couple of items to the board late yesterday by email, comments that we had received this week after the packet had gone out to you. One of them was the town of Cloud Lake identifying reservations about the interchange improvement shown at Southern and I-95. And another was a series of emails that we had received from residents in the Boca and in the Boynton Beach and Delray Beach area, expressing a desire to see more emphasis placed on bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure projects in the long-range plan. And again, to the second comment, and I think the lady from Cloud Lake is here, so she'll have an opportunity to speak to you.
I have two cards on this.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a moment. But to the second comment, as far as the bike and pedestrian infrastructure projects, I mentioned in the email that the reason we don't show individual projects is because of the cost of those projects. They're relatively low-cost projects to implement, and so we put those projects also under the umbrella of this local initiatives program, which allows us to dynamically select annually which corridors, which locations we would like to best see improvements made to the bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure without having to specify those locations in this long-range 25-year plan.
Well, one more. Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you. I've been asking for the Department of Airports to be here. I understand they're working on an updated master plan, and here we are talking about them and the four airports. And, again, I understand and agree with this. I just think we need to talk more about our airport transportation needs and use and concerns because, it could be much larger or utilized, I think, and I'd like to know what their master plan shows. So I'll be happy to hear once they get their master plan updated and come before us, hopefully, and do a presentation because we hear from the port regularly because we have a member here, but we don't – and Palmtran and rails and stuff, but we don't hear from the airport. So, I just bring it up because I still think it's an integral part of what this board looks at.
Agreed. Thank you. Mayor Triola.
I just want to take this opportunity. I know sometimes you see how passionate I am here. And as from the last presentation that was done by our city, you know the needs we have and how many years we've been spending to try to address our infrastructure needs. So I jotted a couple things down, if you wouldn't mind, if I just asked you something. Before we make a vote on this, I'd like to ask the board to consider the addition of Boutwell Road to MPO's long-range transportation plan. As you may or may not know, Boutwell Road is a collector road serving the Lake Worth Park of Commerce. It's currently a two-lane road that is not adequate to serve the planned commercial use for the corridor. I'd like to add a project to the highway component of the cost-feasible plan to widen Boutwell Road to three lanes and improve the corridor for commercial use. The project is crucial for achieving economic development and jobs for the region and a chance for stability for our city. Everyone knows the struggles of Lake Worth. As a community with a poverty rate just ahead of Belgrade and behind Riviera Beach, the need to create economic success and to bring investment is crucial. Our city's ability to do that in a meaningful way involves realizing the potential of the Park of Commerce. The area is bounded by I-95 on the east, 10th Avenue North on the north, 2nd Avenue North on the south. It's centrally located with easy access to Palm Beach International Airport, a tri-rail station, a major east-west road, the interstate, and reasonably priced housing. However, all plans and hopes hinge on the improvement of Boutwell Road. The City of Lake Worth has been working on the Park of Commerce since the late 1990s. Along with my commissioners, I've again made this a priority for the city at this time. We realize we need your help and consideration and the consideration of our fellow cities in the county. Having Boutwell Road on our long-range map is vitally important to the success of this effort. Boutwell Road is the main artery into and through our Park of Commerce. Due to the road's current configuration, the development and redevelopment potential of the properties within the 393-acre Park of Commerce are greatly limited by traffic performance standards, drainage, and safety. Boutwell is a county road. The city, however, has done all the groundwork in design for the new roadway to correct drainage, install sidewalks, add utility improvements, along with increasing capacity and safety. I therefore respectfully request that Boutwell Road be added to the MPO's long-range plan.
Thank you, Mayor Nick. Would you like to weigh in on this request?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've spoken with Mayor Triolo. I think this is a good project. One of the flaws in the way we forecast demand and identify need is that we base it on model projections, and we don't always recognize the adequacy of existing facilities to support the use that they're intended to serve. And so this was kind of an overlooked corridor in our long-range planning process. If the board is interested in adding it into the program, we would have the revenue available to do that. As Charlotte noted, we have been allocating residual revenue from the money available for highway improvements to the local initiatives program. So if we wanted to add this project to the plan, we would take that from the local initiatives revenue and be able to accomplish this as well.
Okay, great. Thanks. Commissioner Burdick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Nick. On page 7, goal 3, it's prioritize a safe and convenient non-motorized transportation network. Perhaps would you provide us with information? It's under the first one. It said increase the percentage of pedestrian mode choice. I don't know what 1.7% means, and then in 20, what 5% means. I don't. You can provide us with some additional information on that. It doesn't have to be today.
The general answer is that we survey the behaviors of our traveling public, and based on that survey, 1.7% of the trips people make from their home, their business, et cetera, they currently choose to make by walking. And so what we're seeking to do there, we're seeking to promote pedestrian activity as a mode of transportation by making investments in infrastructure, hopefully being able to measure those investments as they move the dial, as we see more people being willing to walk to their destination.
Okay, and the second one, 3.2, it says buffered bike lanes. We have 8 of them right now. Is that what that means?
Centerline mileage means we have 8 miles of roadway that provides some horizontal separation between the car travel lane and the bicycle facility on the roadway.
Okay, so that's 8 miles now, and our target for 2014 is 100 miles.
That's correct. Okay. And I do want to point out as far as that 2040.
40.
As far as that objective is concerned, those are in priority order. What we'd like to see and our desired investment as far as this plan is concerned for bicycle facilities is to provide a separation between the area for bicycles and the area for driving your vehicle. And I want to be clear, as far as the buffered bicycle terminology we're using, that's a horizontal separation, a striped-out area. It's not a vertical barrier, and there are a variety of reasons why we don't think it's appropriate to show a vertical barrier or to construct a vertical barrier between the cars and the bicycles. But we do want to provide a separate area so that the cars are distinct from and a little bit further away from the cyclists on the roadway. And then the second second targeted investment is those shared use pathways, and then just designated bike lanes that are immediately adjacent to the corridor is kind of our third. And a lot of that decision making as far as where you can fit individual improvements is based on the availability of right of way and cost.
Which we could use these local initiative funds to.
Absolutely, yes. And I mentioned to the board last month, when we have maintenance needs that the MPO may choose to fund a maintenance type of project for a county or a municipal roadway, the opportunity exists not just to resurface the corridor, but to resurface and reuse the corridor potentially in a better way by narrowing the area associated with vehicle travel lanes and providing a better experience for the bicyclists and the pedestrians with that maintenance project. So just another way of using those local initiatives funds.
And that maintenance would be restriping?
Resurfacing and striping, potentially, depending on the quality of the pavement. Yeah.
Commissioner Fitzpatrick.
Just to use, say, Barnett Drive as an example, how would the local initiative process work to modify this plan in the future?
I didn't follow your question.
Well, all right. Barnett Drive is when you're
about well.
Okay, I'm still. Well, how long is that? How long is that road we're talking about? A mile, 2 miles? 1 mile. Would that fall under the $5 million category? Assuming it did, how would that process work?
Well, we actually talked about this because one option available, if it's a small enough project, would be to keep it out of the plan as a line item and to just try to advance the improvement under the local initiatives program. We think that the corridor, based on the improvements that are necessary, will exceed the $5 million threshold. I think the rough estimate that the mayor has developed through their design process thus far is around $6 million for the road construction component of the project.
Correct.
So that's why she was asking for it to be shown as a line item in the plan, because it would exceed the threshold for that local initiatives program.
Okay, if something was below the $5 million threshold, what would the process be for that in the future?
As we did this year, and we're going to be changing the dates slightly, but we would be asking for applications to be submitted to the MPO in this coming year, in 2015. The applications will be due in April. So we'll be announcing the program funding and the application process in the January-February timeframe, and then local governments, transportation providers, transit agencies, et cetera, would be able to submit applications to the MPO. In April, we would review those applications along with the DOT for constructability issues, eligibility issues, make sure that we have a buildable list of projects. And that list would ultimately be advanced through your advisory committees in September of next year, and then to this MPO board for consideration as part of your annual priority projects approval list in September of the coming year.
And how many sub $5 million projects could be funded per year?
Well, it depends on how far below $5 million they go.
I know. So it's available, $5 million available, $10 million available, $15 million?
I think the number is right around $20 to $22 million per year.
Okay.
That will be available for project implementation. Now, the complexity of the projects will vary, so the number of projects that can be funded in any given year will vary as well. And some projects may require phasing over multiple years, a design component, and then potentially even a right-of-way acquisition component before they get to a construction component. And the other point that I continue to have to remind myself to make to the board is the local initiatives program is a new approach to identifying projects that the MPO is able to fund. We haven't done this before in our long-range planning process, and so we haven't really had this kind of flexibility. I say this, it's a new approach, because I want you to understand that we have a transportation improvement program today that funds projects over fiscal years 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19. We've already committed revenue to constructing projects in that five-year period. So implementing this local initiatives program means that the revenue will be available in fiscal year 20 and forward. So it's not instant money. It's money to accomplish projects in a 5 to 6 year time frame at a minimum.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Materio.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. As much as I understand what you just said, what I don't understand, Nick, is what is a better solution for this Boutwell project? Is it a better solution to make a motion and put it in this TIP, or is it a better solution to go through to go through this other process of the initiative project process? Because I don't think the City of Lake Worth can wait 5 years to begin to have some a revenue change based on this.
Well, the TIP funds, it commits all of the available revenue to the MPO to projects in the next 5 years. So regardless of process, you're still looking at year six for funding new ideas. We can always try to accelerate items, but we do so at the expense of deferring other items. So regardless of whether it goes in as a line item in the long-range plan or goes under the local initiatives, it would still be competing in year six for funding. But the other point that I want to make clear to the board is while we have identified anticipated revenue to fund projects, project inclusion in the long-range plan is often a gateway to other funding opportunities. So if we, you know, if the city were to go to the legislature and say we need a direct appropriation for this improvement, one of the questions the legislature would ask them is,
is
it in the long-range plan? And so it opens doors by including it as a line item.
So would it sounds to me like we're better off including it as a line item. And is that something that could happen in the form of a motion today?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
Because I just would like this board to know that I sat on the CRA in 2001 or 2000 when the county was doing the transition of that road into the city or town of Lake Worth. And it is a really crucial component that they thought by now would be up and running. And I would encourage a motion.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Pam, are you still speaking?
Okay,
Commissioner Burdick, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, on page, on your 2040 cost feasible plan, page 27, project number 51 is a Haverhill Road project. And George, if you want to come up here, because George Webb and I have talked about this.
Mr. Webb, come on down.
Excuse me, guys.
Sorry. Widening this road, this Haverhill Road to four lanes, there are three schools in that immediate area. And there's, we're looking at this project to make sure that we need it right now and that it meets all of the needs of the parents and the principals in the area for children who walk and ride their bike to school, and the additional need for bike lanes and maybe a median in the middle so that folks can cross halfway and then get to the other side of the street. So that's in discussion. I don't want to put you on the spot, George, but if it's really not needed right now and if Boutwell is a higher priority for economic development within the city, maybe staff could look at it and perhaps bring back an amendment at our next meeting to include Boutwell and maybe defer number 51 depending on outcome of staff's conversation.
Mr. Webb.
Thank you. George Webb, County Engineer. Actually, Vice Mayor, that's not necessary to involve the MPO, simply because the funding for that Haverhill project resides in the Palm Beach County five-year road program. So if Palm Beach County commissioners want to take dollars assigned to a county project and make it into another county project or give a grant to a city, you guys have the right to do that as part of your five-year work program. So, yes, we're still looking and we'll be coming to you as far as recommendations as far as the Haverhill project. And if we choose to do that or choose the configuration or whatever, you know, that we can talk about that. But that's a county commission decision as far as its five-year plan. And that's what your plan here incorporates, the county's plan, so you can see the entire picture. It's not just the state funding or whatever like it potentially used to be, so you get a better picture as far as the completeness of the system that's going. One of the things I want to add as part of the Boutwell discussion, I've been around long enough that I've interacted with DOT previously, and DOT years ago had a policy that would work very well in that if a road was programmed or an improvement was programmed in their work program, a local government could potentially advance that project, spend its money, get the project earlier, and then be repaid by the funds when they got there in the year that it was in the program. The DOT has changed that policy a few years ago and is saying, you know, we can't rely on those monies being there, so we can't do the advance. But that's exactly what I think Lake Worth would be looking for, is finding an ability to target, to figure out if they could come up with money, if they had certainty that money would be coming back. But it's just a major statewide issue, and whether you guys want to talk about it and maybe approach the DOT to say, instead of a blanket no, is it possible that a small amount of dollars that the MPO controls could be allocated like that if you chose? Because certainly not all of the dollars are going away. We recognize your funding issues at the federal level and Congress controlling how much ultimately is going to be coming out of the Highway Trust Fund ultimately to the states and to the locals. But it was just a mechanism, again, that allowed us some more flexibility that's currently not there now.
Thank you, George.
I might address that.
Okay, it's okay, and then it's Commissioner James.
Sure. I'm sorry. Thank you. I just wanted to address that. Yeah, we've already done, like I said, the planning phases, the design phases. We've got the funding for the infrastructure and the utilities and all of that. So that plan is forward. So with that said, I'd like to make a motion to adopt the long-range transportation plan with the inclusion of Boutwell Road and to put it in the five-year plan if applicable.
All right.
I'll second that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second under discussion. Commissioner James.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the interest of generosity, there are a couple of projects in the long-range transportation plan that I would certainly be willing to defer.
And I bet we can guess exactly what projects they are, Commissioner.
I like you.
The extension of State Road 7, I think there's some funding coming up for that. We're certainly happy as a city of West Palm Beach to allocate that funding and also the extension of Roebuck Road. On a more serious note, obviously, as a member of the commission, these are two projects which our city has fought and will continue to fight, and therefore I cannot vote in favor of the long-range transportation plan.
Understood. Understood. Commissioner Materio, and then we have public comment we have to
Thank
go to
you.
Before we...
And I think the best way for me to handle this is to ask the mayor to change the motion the way that it's read to add Boutwell to long range plan, because I actually am going to vote yes for the long range plan, but I would like it to the record to be to clearly state that I am against the State Road 7 and Roebuck Road projects.
Okay. All right, very good. Any further discussion? All right, I'm going to
just had a question.
Yes, Commissioner Valche.
Nick, you said that we can't really add this to the 5-year program. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can add it to the long range.
So can we change the motion? So, I mean, otherwise we're moving something that we can't possibly do.
Okay. Then I'll retract that first and then make a motion to adopt the long-range transportation plan with the inclusion of Boutwell Road.
And you'll second it, yeah.
Thank you.
Nick, did you want to comment on the new motion?
I just wanted to clarify that Shannon's request was...
Right.
Well, but she's no longer seconding it.
Yeah.
Commissioner Valche has now seconded the – so that's resolved. Okay, we do have a couple cards on this. Richard Stowe, could you please come forward? And you'll have – give us your name and address, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm Richard Stowe. I reside at 414 North Federal Highway in Lake Worth. And welcome, Mayor Triolo. I arrived here today by bicycle and train to speak about the long-range transportation plan from a qualitative, not quantitative, viewpoint. I ask that you incorporate these ideas into your long-range plan before adopting it. Two experiences that I had... one was going to an appliance store on Military Trail, just north of Forest Hill Boulevard, on a Friday afternoon commute in my girlfriend's car. The gridlock was tremendous. Today, I took Tri-Rail instead of riding here, and I arrived at 7:30 to catch a 7:34 train. And there was a recording expecting delay for 20 to 25 minutes, but the train arrived at 8:22. That's just not satisfactory in terms of customer service or communication. If you want to be encouraging public transportation, in general, I'd say avoid road widening. There's been discussion. I want to compliment the mayor about her Greenway initiative in Lake Worth. And there's been some discussion about paving 7th Avenue South as a two-lane road. And local residents in the neighborhood have expressed a desire for a greenway there instead. And that was predicated on 6th Avenue South. I think we need to relook at that. So there's a concept called lane diets, and I think the county should take official policy to reduce standard lane widths of roads from 12 feet to 10 feet. To achieve multiple benefits of bike lanes, shorter distance for pedestrian crossings, and slowing of traffic. And it's also the least cost strategy to achieve those methods. The second thing is modern roundabouts. I haven't heard anything about that in this discussion. In order to, it serves as a way to replace traffic signalization or as an alternative to traffic signalization. They have three characteristics. I don't have time to discuss them right now. But they become more effective when they're developed as a string of roundabouts in the kind of conditions, the urbanized conditions we have here in Palm Beach County. Thirdly, may I proceed? Or?
Yeah, go ahead. Just wrap it up.
Sure. Tri-Rail, the All Aboard Tri-Rail FEC plan. I would have the county request that All Aboard include and incorporate a grade separation plan for the FEC track in Palm Beach County, not just look at the quiet zones.
Okay.
And that... you had this cost feasible plan as opposed to desire plan. In the cost feasible plan, I would include Jupiter, Palm Beach Gardens, West Palm Beach, Lake Worth, Delray, and Boca Raton into that Tri-Rail FEC, or whatever. And then finally, I would go with All Aboard in terms of designing and installing high level platforms for the Tri-Rail FEC. So it's consistent in conformance with All Aboard Florida.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Mr. Stowe. We appreciate your comments. Dorothy Gravelin.
Dorothy Gravelin. I'm the town clerk for the town of Cloud Lake. We're located at the southwest intersection of Southern Boulevard and Interstate 95, very small municipality. We were contacted the early part of September by the Department of Economic Opportunity asking for our comments on the proposed interchange improvements for Southern Boulevard and Interstate 95. They forwarded a project description to us. In reviewing that, we had major concerns concerning the 2040 long-range recommended improvements, specifically the single-lane flyover access from Southern Boulevard to Interstate 95, both northbound, primarily northbound, but also southbound as well. In that plan, it would eliminate the cuts in the median, allowing access to the town of Cloud Lake from Southern Boulevard as it would be a solid median. I believe on the east side of 95, also the median would be closed there at the intersection for the access to Dreer Park, the zoo, and the planetarium. And we sent a letter to the MPO outlining our objections, and I don't know if you've all had a chance to review that. The flyover would be present an economic hardship to the town at that particular intersection. We have a billboard, which is a major source of revenue for the town of Cloud Lake. And with that flyover, the visibility from the north face of the board from I-95 would primarily be eliminated, which would then reduce the amount of payment that we would receive. And that, and then the concerns of the access, we would then have to, anyone that was going westbound on Southern Boulevard trying to enter into the town of Cloud Lake would then have to go to the signalized intersection there at Jim Lake Drive at the entrance to the town of Glen Ridge. So the traffic would go through the town of Glen Ridge to get to the town of Cloud Lake, which would also impact the town of Glen Ridge. It's just a two-lane constricted roadway. And so there are impacts to both municipalities.
Thank you, Ms. Gravelin. We appreciate your comments. Nick, regarding that plan, interchange modifications at Southern Boulevard. Where's that in our TIP?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The design for that project is in fiscal year 15, so this current fiscal year. The contract has not yet moved forward. Dorothy was identifying was requests for input on conceptual plans that were developed through the project development and environmental process for that interchange. And I think the process that she's been asked for to provide feedback is the appropriate place for her to seek to shape the department's goals and design for improvements at that interchange. I would suggest to the board that if that process is not successful, if those comments are not well received and modifications to the design to mitigate these impacts are not advanced, then we should have a further discussion about whether the design of the project and then the construction of that project should actually move forward. The concern I would have is the only action available to the board right now with respect to the long-range plan is to take the dot off the map and say we don't want to see any modifications made at Southern and I-95. And I just don't want to close the door to being able to make a better project that addresses the concerns of the local governments and still promotes better mobility at the interchange.
But what we can do, Ms. Gravelin, is to facilitate your comments and ensure that the DOT understands your concerns, and we can partner with you in having those addressed.
I appreciate that, and we have contacted the Department of Transportation.
Okay, well, we can assist you in that.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much. Okay, any further discussion? We have a motion to adopt the 2040 long-range transportation plan with the addition of Boutwell Road in Lake Worth. We have a motion by Mayor Triola, and we have a second by Commissioner Valache. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. Do we have one opposed or two opposed?
Two
opposed. Okay. Please let the record reflect that Commissioner James and Commissioner Materio have voted negatively. Great. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
We will now move on to our information items. We have TIP project mapping. Nick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to recognize Mayor Triolo for the suggestion that we develop a better graphical depiction of where projects are located, how they're distributed throughout the planning area. And so we have a map for your consideration in your packet, as well as a larger version in the room. And there was a version of it as well on the table in the lobby as you came in this morning. I wanted to introduce Nelly Fernandez from the MPO staff to provide an overview of this project.
Thank you. Our members, if you want to have conversations, please take it out in the hall. Welcome, Nelly.
Thank you. Again, as Nick said, this is an informational item. We prepared this map. I'm trying. Again, Nelly Fernandez and, of course, my coworker here, Luke. We created this map for the purposes of giving you guys a better understanding of our transportation improvement program. And that was recently adopted on June 16th of this year. And based on your feedback, we understand that the TIP is a complicated document, and this map seeks to help you understand where the projects are located and, in addition, to where they're actually going to be built and when. it is our hope that the map does this again. Some of the key items that the map will show are where the projects are, a brief description of what the projects will accomplish. In addition, we color-coded the projects by date of construction, of when it's going to be funded. And it also shows distribution of projects throughout the county. Also, in addition, for more information, you can go online to our website to look, obviously, at this map. But in addition, our interactive TIP that I'm working on, along with DTS, our consultant, for the TIP, the online TIP, to make the interactive TIP look more like this map so that you guys can click on it and be able to figure out what's going on with regards to our projects within our county. So, again, we welcome your feedback and any comments that you may have.
Thank you, Nellie. I think it's excellent. What a great thank you, Mayor Triola, for the suggestion. What a great execution. How nice. Now, my only request is that we could each get a blow up for our community so we can go back and say, hey, look what, well, look what's happening. I mean, I think,
I think that's possible. We have
a
nice plotter that Nick was able to get for us. So.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. I would like to have, you know, city by city or, you know, county district so that we can share the good news with our constituents as to the advancements we're making in the transportation plan.
Okay.
Great.
Sounds good.
Great. Thanks, Nellie. Appreciate that. Correspondence, Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just bringing the board's attention to a memorandum from the Florida Department of Transportation identifying the policy of promoting complete streets, the context-sensitive implementation of complete streets within their DOT projects. So just wanted you to be aware that that Excellent. Concept is moving forward.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And now we will move on to member comments.
Just a quick question, and I can transition into comments if you like.
Okay.
I'm very happy to see the complete streets policy, which now, from what I read, it's officially adopted.
Yes.
And obviously it needs to consist of more than just this page. So it would just be helpful to have the document that goes with this provided or on our website or something, because I think it's great.
So interestingly, there's not a complete streets document that will be developed as a result of this policy. But what they are doing in the Department of Transportation is they're revisiting all of their design guidelines and standards to make modifications to them to accomplish these complete streets principles.
So then this is not really in effect if they don't have specific guidance.
This is a commitment to include that perspective as they're modifying their standards for individual projects.
Okay, let me ask a follow-up question. In the instance of, say, the B-line, when there wasn't sufficient funding or right-of-way for a sidewalk, for a bike path, would this be applicable in that instance?
I think the obstacle we ran into with the 710 project was the use of federal funds to acquire right-of-way that was not permitted.
Right. It was
pursuant to the strings attached to the money.
Right.
So I don't think this policy would change that discussion. I think a better example of a project where this policy changes the conversation is with the US 1 Bridge Rehabilitation Project, where the initial design was not going to provide bicycle facilities, and we were able to persuade the department using documents such as this one that they needed to make design exceptions within the bridge platform itself to allow for us to provide an area for bicyclists, an area for pedestrians, and an area for cars.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Is your card for complete streets or member comments?
Comments.
Okay. Wendy, you've got...
Yeah, I just had a...
Wait a minute here.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Webb would like to address us.
Wow.
Sorry. I had an opportunity recently to talk to the state complete streets coordinator. And I said, okay, if you guys have a policy like this, does this just open it up so we can ask for 10-foot wide sidewalks and buffered bike lanes and, you know, this? And he said, no. It absolutely does not. He said, you know, there's going to be fiscal constraints applied like anything else. He said it provides the ability to address in a context-sensitive situation. And Nick described some of the examples that would make applicable and so forth. But he, in essence, said it is absolutely and positively not one of those of opening the door up to provide everything for everybody for each project. It has to have the cost of benefit and constraints as far as everything associated with that. So.
I say, but it does recognize it as a policy that we wish to achieve. So, I mean, I think I think it's really a seminal moment that the DOT has incorporated this into their guidelines. No, I truly do. So that's wonderful. All right, Commissioner Harrison, do you want to you can conclude your member comments, sure. Then we'll move to...
Sure, no problem. I was just going to give a couple of comments on the Railvolution conference.
Oh, sure.
A couple of takeaways I had. One was there was a lot of discussion on upcoming referendums that folks were planning for transportation funding to occur in 2016, and I just wanted to give all of us, especially the county commissioners, a heads up that those organizers already have their project lists either drafted or in place. So now's the time to be thinking about the projects that you'd want to include if you were going out for funding in 2016. So I thought that was a good takeaway. And then I, too, was impressed by the light rail in the city in already urbanized areas. It's kind of thing that you would think starting out would be impossible, but they managed to fit it in. The only concern I had was really for pedestrians because they've already hit a couple of people.
Wow.
It's the trains are right in the middle of the road, and when they get going, they get going. And if you're in the crosswalk, it's, you know, people are learning the hard way, basically. So that was a concern, but it's very effective, and the different lines are very dependent on where they go. One goes right through a university, and it's you know, very well traveled, very well, you know, a lot of participation on that line. And then just something relative to freight versus commuter rail. They have a commuter rail that runs on the same line as the Burlington Northern Santa Fe trains, and with all of the coal, you know, the oil from the shale fields, the Burlington Northern trains have significantly increased in quantity, and it's very much messing up the schedules of the commuter trains. And that's kind of what I was getting at in the tri-rail discussion yesterday, is that the commuter trains at some point have an interest in less freight, you know, once you get to that capacity level. But it's really playing havoc with their system because they aren't able to keep on their schedules that they were on previously. So the ridership on that commuter line, which was still pretty new, has gone down because their schedules are impacted by those freight trains. So that was interesting.
Great. Thank you so much. Commissioner Fitzpatrick.
This is more in line of a question for Nick. Over the weekend, I think it was a Palm Beach Post article on the tri-rail, not all aboard Florida Station in Miami, and there was one little short sentence about it's getting late in the day to plan out for the tri-rail station component of that. And so I'm just curious, how's that stand, and what are the plans for Fort Lauderdale and West Palm for a tri-rail station component?
Are you talking about all aboard?
All aboard, yes. Oh.
My general understanding, and I was looking in the audience because Bill Cross is the director of RTA, and he was here, planning director for the RTA, and he was here earlier. He's still here. So maybe I'll give you my general answer, and we'll let him supplement if he chooses to. The general answer is that the All Aboard Florida project team is collaborating with RTA and the DOT project development team for Coastal Link to ensure that the stations that they will construct are being built in a manner that will be compatible with Coastal Link service. But there's a conversation about the incremental cost associated with that compatibility, and they're looking to the public sector to fund that incremental cost. And so that's one of the items that we are using in the conversation regarding a negotiated access fee, because as a public entity, we don't see any value in paying an incremental cost for station compatibility unless we have the ability to run commuter trains on their corridor, which presently we do not. So it's an evolving conversation. I don't know if I described it well, if you want to add anything, Bill, but that's my general understanding, that yes, we are in conversations with them trying to ensure compatibility, so with the caveat that we need that access fee.
So it's a fluid situation.
Yes.
It's an evolving discussion. It's certainly an active conversation right now.
Thank you. Commissioner Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's come to my attention, and we have principal of Palm Springs Middle School, Sandra Jenks, here today, and the village manager of Palm Springs, Kim Glass Castro. about a intersection improvement project at the corner of Forest Hill Boulevard and Kirk Road. And about 100 feet onto Kirk Road is where 1,500 boys and girls exit the school each and every day. Currently, the principal and the parents at the school, the community, has concerns about the traffic in the area. Within the past 2 weeks, a student leaving school didn't look both ways and was hit by a car. So they would like some Palm Springs, and the school would like to continue dialogue, and perhaps Nick could bring back an amendment to our TIP program at our next meeting, depending on the outcome of the collaboration between FDOT and the school and the village. I don't know if I've framed it correctly. Would you like to say anything, or is...
I'm Kim Glass-Castro. I'm here wearing my Palm Springs hat today rather than my Lake Park hat.
And I'm Sandy Jinks, principal at Palm Springs Middle School. And yes, over 1,500 students enter and exit, plus parents, plus buses, plus bicyclers, walkers. Very, very congested in that area. And the school is right on Kirk Road and not very far from Forest Hill, the Forest Hill intersection. So it is dangerous, and you want to make further comments, and then I'll jump in.
DOT is in the design phase for intersection improvements. They reached out to us asking if we have any comments, and after reviewing the preliminary plans and the cross-section, we expressed concern. Our concerns were first with their consultants, feeling that we weren't getting anywhere. We asked for a specific meeting out at the corner. We scheduled it to be at school dismissal so they could see firsthand how many children come out of the school and use that intersection to cross the street to get their homes. So I think that was effective in that they realized what we were talking about. But still, the consultants, being a numbers engineer, I don't mean to bash engineers, but they're coming from the perspective this 23 hours a day, this improves the intersection maneuvers. And they're not taking into account the half hour in the morning and the half hour in the afternoon when it's the peak school times, the safety considerations for expanding the intersection and for adding a dual turn lane onto Kirk Road when Kirk Road is not proposed to be widened to accept another lane. So you have a merging characteristic where you have two lanes turning, merging into a single lane right in front of the school, where you have the conflict with school buses, parents coming into the car line, as well as just regular traffic trying to use Kirk Road as a thoroughfare. We also have with us Captain Perez, who can talk about incidents and the safety issues, but we don't know that we're getting anywhere with DOT expressing our concerns about the design of the project. The response from the consultant was, well, we can go ahead, build it, and we'll just stripe it out so that people can't use that lane. But why would you spend public money to build something that's not going to be used? It can't be used until Kirk Road is widened adequately. Otherwise, it's a safety hazard.
It's risky as it is now, and it's been risky. And we do have a huge population in our school. But this particular proposal would increase that risk, in my opinion, almost 100%, because it would drive two lanes into the current Kirk Road in front. And Kirk Road's not very wide, and the sidewalks aren't wide. And the children are walking, and they are on their bicycles. Parents are trying to get in. Buses are trying to get in. Buses, and the same thing in the afternoon. It's really more like an hour, a good hour before, a good hour after, that we have this kind of congestion in front of the school. It's really not safe.
All right. Well, what we can do is facilitate your comments with the DOT, Nick, as we offered to do for Cloud Lake earlier, and make sure that your voices are heard with them, and see if we can facilitate that for you.
We appreciate that.
And we
much.
Appreciate you taking the time to come forward today, and thank you for bringing that.
Possibly amend, bring back an amendment if necessary, depending on the outcome.
Well, let's see what the outcome is. You know, the best case would be get to have DOT, you know, consider the impacts there and amend their design, you know, to meet the needs for the school zones and the pedestrians. Okay.
Thank you.
Any further member comments? If not, our next meeting, again, will be December 8th, which is a Monday, and it will be up at the Vista Center, so we don't want to see anybody sitting around here waiting for us. If there's no further comments or discussions, then we are adjourned at a very nice time today. I'm very pleased. Thank you all so much. It's 10:36.
Appreciate your help.